I guess the best parameter I have myself is I get chills. That's like when I really feel there is an opening of the energies and I'm transmitting through me as a channel a lot of energy to the audience.
That was Søs Gunvær Ryberg.
And this is Nordic Portraits.
Søs Gunvær Ryberg is a multi-award-winning composer, producer, sound artist, and live performer. Known for her intense and genre-defying electronic recorded works and concerts, Søs is also involved in compositional and soundtrack work for video games, films, international theatre and philharmonics, as well as dance productions and installation. She is the recipient of the prestigious Carl Nielsen Honorary Award and a BAFTA nominee. Søs, welcome to Nordic Portraits.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Søs, I would very much like to start by going back to the early years of your musical journey, where you received a word of encouragement from your then vocal teacher to start experimenting with digital music production. And I just wondered what new discoveries were awaiting a young Søs Gunvær Ryberg.
Well, that was a whole new world opening up for me. I was at that time working as an experimental performer and I had no technical background or was actually not interested as such in technology. And then she encouraged me to start creating with the computer. And it was a whole new world opening up for me. I was able to create my own vision and universes. I had a lot of ideas and a lot that I was interested in exploring, especially with merging different art forms together. And then to suddenly be able to have this world of creating on the computer was completely mind-blowing for me.
And up until that point, what had been your exposure to music? Did you grow up in a family that had an emphasis on the arts?
To a certain degree, yes. But my parents were not artists and they had normal jobs. And I was living together with my mother. And she was always very interested in arts. And in her upbringing, she was dancing ballet and playing the piano. And I really think that she probably wanted to become an artist herself. But because at that time, when she grew up in the 40s and 50s, it was just another time. And she had my big sister at an early age. So her life was not really gonna go in that direction. And then when I grew up, I felt that she was just very open and very supporting in what I wanted to explore. Like, not encouraging me, but just letting me do what I had the inner pull to do. So if I wanted to be dancing, then she made it happened that I was going to dance classes. When I then lost the interest of that and changed into something else, then she was supporting that I then was doing music or whatever it was. But one thing that was very continuous in our life and in our family was that we were engaged with theater. So in that area where I grew up, there was a lot of experimental theater happening. And it was, of course, people having jobs and then in their leisure time or as their hobbies, they would then go and we would meet up in these theater groups. And it was very experimental happenings and performances that was taking place because in the area I grew up was a lot of Bohem people who moved from Copenhagen out to just 40 minutes away from Copenhagen, and they lived in a big collective. It was called the Hotel, if I translate it. And they were different families living in this big old hotel. And they were all very creative as well, but not working as artists. But it was a creative spirit in the area, and especially at that place.
And you had a piano in your home, but it seemed that it was more the tape recorder that captured your imagination when you were younger.
Yeah, my mother had her piano, but this piano was so out of tune. It was just like you tried to play it and it just the most atonal experience you can have. It was fantastic when I think back of it. But as a kid, and I also tried to take piano lessons just for half a year, but I couldn't really find the inspiration or go home and rehearse because everything was just too... Actually, the way that I was being taught was too straight for me, and I wanted to be much more explorative on the piano. I loved to sit myself and just play some weird chords, or I didn't know it was chords, but, you know, just some different notes at the same time. And then I was very interested in the tape recorder, and I think it was something my father gave to my brother, because he's 7 years older than me, so he was listening to language tapes to learn French or German. And that tape recorder, I found out that you could record on it. And then I became really interested in creating my own tapes and just doing both alone, but also with friends, different recordings of us hanging out and doing stories, but also just walking around. And then it was singing songs, or it was just our lives that we were recording on tapes. And I have still a huge bag full of these old cassettes, and I have a dream that sometime I will have time to go through them. But yeah, I don't know if that will be possible for me to go through all those tapes again. But yeah, it was definitely something funny. I didn't have this technological background because nobody was really interested in tech. At that time, we didn't have a computer or anything like that. So I wished really for getting a microphone, but nobody really saw this curiosity within me or with me exploring on the tape recorder. So it was not something I got as such. And then the theater was such a big thing, and that's how I kind of continued to explore.
So with this bag of tapes, if you were to go back and listen to them, what do you think you would experience doing that?
That's a good question. I guess it could be fun at first, and then maybe lose my, maybe I would then lose my interest in it, because it's a little bit like if you're reading a diary, then in the beginning it might be fun, the first two lines, but then it, you get tired of the way you're writing or something like that. And I don't think I actually have the patience to go and listen back to all those recordings, because I think I will more be thinking about something new I want to create. Right now, at least, that's how I'm feeling, but maybe it will change when I'm older. But I don't really want to be retrospective in that way. And I think in the beginning, when I started exploring again sound, it was kind of like I picked up from where I left. And it's actually something I know is quite common for when you do drawings, that if you stopped drawing at a certain age, you kind of start at that age, you stopped, and then you continue your development. So maybe you could say something similar happened for me. I was very interested in the Walkmans I had from that time, and then in my mother's house, I found some of the tapes and I started listening to it. And I think I also did maybe some samples of it, but then I got lots of new ideas that I wanted to explore and do new works with this whole technology of tapes. And then I was actually recording a lot around and doing more sound installations from these old tape recorders I had.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this practice of field recordings. Is it in essence a form of documentation, or is it a creative outlet, or a mixture of both?
For me, it became definitely a blurring between. I think first I was more documenting what was around me, and I remember one of my earliest pieces was actually at a party, and it happened to be that the Pope had died, and I was recording people's reaction, and then I was mixing it together with the radio and the whole reactions throughout the world of people in sorrow and their different ways of feeling around this, in a contrast with these people at a party, you know, who were drunk and had like some crazy sayings about the Pope, and it became a very complex sound piece I did. So that was more like a documentation, but also a bit fiction, because of course I sit and created a mix of realities at the same time. And I think that field recordings for me are very, very inspiring, because you connect so deep with the moment when you are doing these recordings. So you listen in a very different way. And of course, that you have done these recordings yourself gives a completely different engagement with the audio. It's just much deeper than if it was a audio recording of someone else that I found and used. It's like it opens up the memories and the senses when I listen back to recordings I've done. Yeah.
What are some of the most interesting places that this process has taken you to?
There is so many different interesting places. I can say an example is that I became very interested in shamanistic music from the East Coast of Korea. And I was in South Korea in 2012 and did a lot of recordings and was just exploring as well the music in performance and listening to it to get a much more embodied feeling of it. And those field recordings is something I hold very dear, because it connects with the experience of being there.
And do you then release those recordings as tracks, or are they archived for future projects? How do you incorporate them in your artistic practice?
So the field recordings I did at that time was not released. It was just for my own process and my own experience, because I get very deep with listening. So I just have a completely different interaction with the country and with the culture if I also record at the same time, or with nature. And at that time, I was already working more with electronic music. And before that, I had been more doing sound art and installation work. And the music I was inspired by was the East Coast music, because it has so much energy. It's so powerful. It's very noisy. It's very connected to nature. And it's very much those elements that are a very big inspiration in my own work. So I really was fascinated when I found out there is this way of creating different states of consciousness by actually being in a very polyrhythmical sound world and very noisy and nothing to do with what we normally consider relaxation music, or how you normally get into trance states. I mean, you can also get into trance states with a very high energy expression, and that is something I explore myself in my own work. So in that sense, the music was a big inspiration for me in what I was creating at that time as well.
Yeah. So your journey of self-expression obviously began by growing up in a creative community that allowed you to explore many forms of performance. Can you remember any specific point in time where you were drawn to sound as a form of expression?
I think growing up, I was not really thinking about sound. When I grew up, the first 4 years of my life, I had a very, very reduced hearing level. And my parents found out when I was at the age of four, and my parents wasn't really certain in the beginning what was wrong. So that's why it also took them some time to figure it out. And I was actually lip reading in the first years, so I had more or less developed my own language. That's what I've been told. Of course, I don't really remember much from that time. And I do remember I was very much living in my own world. And then when they found out and my hearing got fixed, I had to then learn basically to talk, and also my movements and language is very closely connected. So I had also to go to different movement training to basically catch up. And I'm super sound sensitive now. It's really something I'm sometimes struggling with. But I also think it's probably one of the reasons why I am working with sound. And it might be a surprise for someone, because I also work with very noisy and powerful sounds. So it's very complex for me, this whole expression of sound.
Well, in addition to that, you've also mentioned before that you were a bit of a wild child.
Yeah.
I just wondered whether that physical exuberance played a part in you at a later stage training and performing as a stunt woman. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was. I loved just climbing and being very physical and doing mad stuff. I had a lot of energy that I needed to let out. And it was actually through one of these theater explorations with my family. We would also sometimes have directors who came and was teaching us. And one time there was a stuntman coming and training us, because we needed to use this training for something that was actually being filmed. And I got very curious about that. It fit very well with how I liked also to explore these more expressive energies. And then when I was in my early 20s, I came across stunt again. And then I thought, okay, I'm really gonna go further into training. And it was a system developed by the stuntman Martin Spang Olsen. And it's a system where you are also training your senses. So you really work with all the different types of energies. So after we had been doing very physical training, we would then also relax and maybe do healing work on each other or other types of more calm energy work. So you worked very complex with your whole being.
And what prevented you from pursuing that as your main career?
I think definitely that I love being physical, but I also don't really want to have too many injuries. So I had a few injuries, and then I thought, okay, this is probably going to be too challenging for me to continue, because I really cherish to have a body which is not broken.
Well, what strikes me when listening to you share about your earlier experiences, Suss, growing up in this creative community, is that there clearly was this emphasis placed on exploring what you're interested in and finding out new things without being fixated on the outcome, you know, following your curiosity and not necessarily worrying about results.
Yeah.
I just wondered if you've consciously taken that mindset with you in your career as a sound designer and composer.
Definitely. I definitely feel that I'm most aligned with myself when I just explore and am able to discover something new or experience and innovate. And that's my best way of being and creating, actually. We also live in a reality where you get commissions, or I have a concert and there are deadlines. So there I meet this conflict of course, I also need to be able to finish something for a release or for a concert or if it's a commission. So I'm good at working to deadlines as well and structuring myself, but I really feel that my spirit is so much in flow when I can just keep on exploring and I don't have to wrap it up for this deadline. But then again, I have a view, a long perspective, and I just see that all my works are explorations that feed off each other. So in that way, I'm continuously developing and exploring. And what I learned from this process or research, I can bring into the next. And in the beginning, I saw myself more like, it was probably more challenging to finish a composition or a work, because I thought that is the final product or that is the final result. But then as I'm now older and have so much more experience, I just see that it's just a continuous exploration of my core inspirations. So it will never finish until I die, of course.
So to that end, you mentioned all of these strands of varying projects, and it's very clear when I look back through your body of work that you're highly prolific and versatile in terms of the mediums you work in. Undoubtedly, there's no shortage of opportunities or offers for new projects. So how do you then evaluate if a project is interesting and right for you? And is it difficult for you to constantly maintain focus on your direction as an artist?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I really, I'm guided by my inner voice. And if this project has something new that I haven't explored before, I can see that this is something I missed working with. It could be that I hadn't worked for dance for some years, and then I felt now I'm actually really interested and open for working with dance again. Then it happens to be that I receive an email from someone working with that field after I've had the thought. And then, of course, I will evaluate if this is the right collaboration. But I'm very much following my inner compass on what I feel interested in exploring. For instance, I think now I've basically worked with all media formats you can work with. So my inner compass is also changing a bit, because my curiosity is different now, because I have experience with working with film, I have experience with installations, I have the experience now with working with opera, I have also experience with composing for a symphony orchestra. So there are many things that I have never even had the imagination to be working with, but where it came, for instance, as a commission. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. I definitely want to try this. I like being out of my comfort zone. So I think that's also been part of why I was exploring all these different art forms. But I'm now changing in the way that I will accept the next projects and collaborations. I definitely feel much importance in releasing more music and also being out performing more concerts. The last 10 years, I have had a lot of focus on these different projects, and now I feel that it's the music releases that is very urgently wanting to come out.
Yeah. I'm really interested by that particular mention of recorded work, Sus, because in 2016, you released your debut EP, Altuk.
Yeah.
And I'm really fascinated by the fact that for so many years, you were primarily working in the ephemeral sphere of performance and installation. So was this then a conscious shift towards the permanence of recorded work? And how was that for you to put something out into the world that's more or less set in stone?
It was so difficult for me to do that. It was really because I was being pushed and encouraged, of course. But it was, first of all, not something I was really interested in. I have grown up in the ephemeral way of expressing myself and doing works of art. So in that sense, the release, which is normally for many artists or music creators, is like, that's the way you express yourself. But I was more interested in these collaborative projects where it was immersive. That's a word that is so important for my work and my, yeah, everything I'm doing, that it has immersiveness. And that I really feel is happening when you merge different art forms together. And I find it's very beautiful that music then becomes part of this creation where it's expressed as a whole universe. And of course, I think that is related to my whole background with the experimental performance theater. But I did this release, and then slowly I actually found out that, of course, even though that is a print that is fixed, it will always change when you listen to it. And I discovered that through listening and also deep conversations with important people around me, that listening is a state that always changes. And even though the record is fixed, your mood, where you are, and everything is changing around you. So in that sense, the music will also be changing. And that opened up for this way that things are still in process, even though it has been recorded, because you are also in process as a human. And I then became much more interested in doing more releases. And what I also, of course, discovered is that you connect with people internationally. And that is something that opened up and I find now is super important for me, because I have had a focus on works that's been very much connected, site-specific. And of course, I want to be more able to transfer my music into settings where it can be much more experienced by everyone at every time of the day. And it has the possibility to go out in all these different areas of human existence.
And you mentioned mobilizing your work at various sites or locations. I found it very interesting to note that prior to any performance, you are very eager, wherever possible, to visit the venue beforehand in order to better understand the space. Can you share a little about what you're looking to achieve when you're scoping out a particular space?
I mean, now it's unfortunately not possible for me, but if I am in Denmark and it's a site-specific place, I would definitely go and experience the acoustics and get a feeling for what is the dynamics, what is the reverb, what type of material can I actually perform in this setting. If it's abroad, it says on my tech writer that they need to inform me if there is a special acoustic in the space. So I have an awareness, and also send me pictures so I more understand what kind of space I will be performing in, because it's very, very different, the places I perform. So it's important for me to know.
And is there an element of that beyond the technical? Is there a spiritual or emotional resonance that occurs in a physical space when you're connecting with an audience? Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. I definitely also feel that it's important for me to understand the energy of the space and also the history, if it has a longer history. And I think it definitely gives me an awareness of what type of concert I want to perform.
How do you know yourself when you've had a good show? Are there any telltale signs that your performance has hit the mark?
For me, it's of course important that the connection with the audience is there. And when I feel I've achieved, well, it's difficult to perceive what other people are perceiving, but I will definitely think about what happened and how the experience and the energy was in the room. But I'm not really able to completely understand what type of sound experience the audience have, because the sound I have on stage compared to what they are listening to can be very, very different. And especially if I perform in site-specific locations, the sound will change whether you go 1 meter to the left or 1 meter to the right, or, you know, if it has like some crazy resonances going on. But in that sense, it becomes a very immersive and very physical experience. And I feel that it becomes a connection where things are basically just so... I guess the best parameter I have myself is I get chills. That's like when I really feel there is an opening of the energies and I'm transmitting through me as a channel. And in that sense, that is for me a way of knowing that I've really connected and sent out a lot of energy to the audience. And it's important for me that the physicality of my music is embodied, that it's an experience where people really are being transformed by the sound, and that it has to be physical, but really not in a way where it's loud for your ears, but where it's loud for the body and you feel the sound vibration going in and resonating with your whole DNA of your body. I've had people who wrote me after shows and just told me how they basically had very physical reactions afterwards, and they had to go to the bathroom and they kept shaking in their body because so much energy or so much power was being set in resonance with them. So they feel they get very deeply transformed. But I think you have to talk to someone who's actually experienced this way of reacting afterwards. I've also had people who come up to me and cry. So it can be very different in the way that people react.
How do you feel when you hear that sort of feedback and know that you led people through such an experience?
I feel that it's important that something is being changed and healed. But to be honest, I also feel shy and in a way a bit like it's also something where I feel I'm not completely part of it. And it sounds a little bit weird, but it's almost like when I perform and these situations happen, something else is coming through me and I'm not really in control of this energy coming. I'm just transferring as a medium this energy of healing and transformation. So in that sense, I can also afterwards feel a little bit that I didn't have anything to do with it in a way. I don't know if it makes sense, but it's just that it's actually not my personality or something that's done this. It's something higher. I'm not part of it in a way.
It then makes me ask the question, is your sense of spirituality very much informed by your artistic expression?
Yeah. Yes, it's definitely, I think it's going both directions, of course. And my spirituality is definitely connected to my way of expressing myself in my art, and also the other way around. I mean, it's totally a connection that is inseparable.
Do you remember when you first had a spiritual experience related to sound?
I think that is probably when I was very small and I was looking up in the trees and I was just listening to how the leaves are moving in the wind. That is one of my early memories of sound. And I think, of course, that's also a very deep connection for me with the inspiration of nature in my work.
And you talk about having this high level of sensitivity to sound. Is there a downside on a very practical level to your daily life with having the sensitivity? Are there times where you can be particularly anxious or triggered by sounds?
Yes, a lot. I mean, I sometimes just have to walk around and have something in my ears to basically not get overstimulated by sounds. So when I travel on tour, I have already my earplugs in so I don't get so fatigued by just the surrounding sounds. And in general, yes, my nervous system is reacting a lot to sound, but some days are much better than others. Meaning I am much more tolerant.
Yeah. In 2017, Sus, your mother passed away very suddenly, shortly after a cancer diagnosis. And I can't imagine how difficult that must have been for you. I just wondered, in the aftermath of that, what role, if any, your art played in processing that grief?
At that time, I was very busy and I was actually commissioned to make music for a film and also an installation in Germany. And it was important for me to continue the works, even though it was very challenging. And it happened to be that both projects had something with death, actually. So in a way, I could process her passing away through those two projects. But I think my processing of this grief is still something for life. It's still going on.
Are you someone who finds it easy to express your emotions? Or is it often your art that allows you to express yourself in that way?
I think I am good with expressing myself in conversations. Yeah. I definitely do, but I also happened to, at that time, go into a period where I was very busy. So busyness is also sometimes a way of dealing with grief. And I realized that a couple of years ago, there was actually some things I hadn't really processed enough because I just didn't let myself have the time. And it takes time to also get over such a big change in your life. It's like at that point, I then didn't have my mother or my father anymore. So it was also about just this whole new way of dealing with being an adult in a completely new way of being, not having your parents anymore. It was a big change for me.
Yeah. If we turn our attention to some of the specific projects you've been involved in, I wondered if we could briefly discuss the 2016 game you were involved with, Inside.
Sure.
For the layperson, of which I'm definitely one, can you share a little about the process for writing and recording musical composition for a game, especially one as high profile as this?
Yeah. So I had no experience with video games and I collaborated with another composer, Martin Stig Andersen, and it was a really amazing experience to be involved in this whole creation. So I created the music and also worked on some of the sound design for the game. And I was actually very free and it was super fun because we had lots of time to explore. It took many years to create this game. So there was explorations of, for instance, playing synth sounds through human skulls to figure out that resonant and filtration that happens when a synth sound gets played through a skull with contact mics.
Do you have a few human skulls lying around in the studio? Or how does that?
I don't. Okay. It's actually, it started with Martin, who had read an interview with, I think it was an opera singer actually, who was interested in listening to her voice, like how it's basically being filtrated through her own skull. And then he gets the producer to basically find a skull, and they found it in these labs or these schools that have lots of
anatomy and
exactly. So it was being borrowed, and then it started the whole process of how to actually do this with the contact mics and transducers.
Did the result surprise you?
Yeah, it actually did. It's very interesting because it becomes very airy and it gives you chills when you listen to it because it's very filtrated and it has, I feel that we know that sound or that type of filtration. We know it from our own voice when we hear ourselves talking. We always get so surprised when we listen back to a voice being recorded. And then it just has something very specific in the aesthetic of the quality that resonates with you in a specific way. And the sound is something that actually became very much a signature for the game as well. But it surprised me also how much you have to repair the sound afterwards. I know Martin said he had to do quite a lot for making it listenable again after it has been processed in this way, because it has so much resonating frequency, so it becomes too rough if you just put it back in the game without basically doing some further treatments afterwards.
You talk about working closely with Martin. More generally speaking, what would you say are the hallmarks of a good creative collaboration?
Freedom and openness and being able to listen for each other's ideas and input. Yeah. And that both people want to be giving each other space for what they are good at. And that was part of how we also started working together. Martin had heard my music, so he also knew what sort of expression I do and what I'm good at. And that was what he was interested as well in. And I love that I could really just create from, of course, that expression that I was already exploring. Like some of the compositions that came into the game, they are actually from my life work. So it was something I was performing at the time at a concert, and I would then come back and play it to Martin, and he was like, oh, that's really interesting. Let's try to put it into this part of the game. And then we would try it out in different settings.
Your most recent album, Spine, was released on your own label, Arterial, which you've just launched recently. Can you tell me a little bit about what motivated you to establish your own label?
I feel that I'm missing more diversity in who owns the label. And I felt also that I wanted to have a label where it's faster to go from the creation to the actual production. Because normally when we do releases, there can be actually years between you created the music and then it gets out to the people. And a lot of things happen in those years for an artist normally. You can be in a completely different artistic direction or exploration. So sometimes it's hard that we have created some music and then you have to go out, for instance, and play concerts with this music and it's been 2 years. And in a way, it can also be nice that you get to know your material much deeper and you have another understanding of what it is that you created. But I wanted to release music in a way where it becomes more process instead of being this whole long, yeah, those years passing in between. And also that hopefully I can release more music, because that is where I'm heading, that I'm going to do more releases.
And the business or administrative side of that, that doesn't bother you as an artist or a creative, having to also deal with some of the day-to-day grind of running a label?
Maybe it will, but so far I found it very empowering that I knew now what is the whole process of doing a release. And I chose a pressing plant because I also pressed vinyls, but I was very aware that I wanted to press eco-friendly vinyl. So I found a pressing plant not far away from Copenhagen, and I could go and visit them and have a meeting and listen to other pressings that's done 100% out of recycled PVC. So I had a much more deep and embodied experience with the process, and also understanding, because when you're on the other side and you've done releases before, you can be frustrated with your label and yeah, all kinds of dynamics that happens. But I felt that now I'm much more aware and grateful also for the work that others have done for me in the releases I've had. But I feel very empowered by being able to do it myself, and also the way I want to do it, because doing it on an environmental friendly release where it's 100%, both the cover and the vinyl, is very expensive. It's actually much more expensive than just a normal pressing. So I also knew that I probably had to basically be the one paying for that in order for making it happen. But then I also got it exactly as I wanted it to be.
Just in closing, Sus, I wondered, as an electronic artist today, there just seems to be a myriad of tools available at one's disposal. I'm guessing almost daily there are new software and hardware releases. So I'm curious, how do you navigate that in terms of keeping up with the technology whilst not letting it distract you from the process of creating?
That's a good question. I think I'm good with that because, of course, I love technology and it's very important for me, but I'm not a fanatic about it. Like, I don't go crazy when a new machine is being released or a new software is coming on the market or something. I think I'm a bit hard to impress with this, I've been told, because I'm much more interested in, well, what is the music that I want to create and what is the expression that I'm going to explore? And I might need some different technologies to do this expression, because it can be quite complex what I'm doing technically. And there I'll go deep and find out what is it I need to create that experience. But it's not so much the other way around where I'm going crazy about a new machine being released that I need to work with. It's more important for me that I get the inner pull to express something specific, and I then find out that's the machine I need for doing that.
Who do you go to for advice, or do you in fact seek any input as part of your creative process?
When I'm composing, I'm very much single-minded. I'm more isolating myself with the compositions, and I don't really play anything before it's done or nearly done. So I don't really seek the feedback as such. I don't know, it's always been like that. I don't really share my process. And in that sense, it's also challenging for me to actually collaborate with other people in the same, like if you were a band, for instance, or you had to compose on the same track or composition. It worked out well working with Martin because he gave me so much space and our roles were very clearly defined as well. But yeah, so in that sense, it's hard for me to, I think, have a mutual collaboration with music, because I'm basically my own band. And many of the other electronic composers are as well. So we will be fighting about who's doing what. I do that sometimes, but it's not so often. It's more like a concert. I can be playing together with someone else.
I've often wondered if solo artists like yourself ever envy those that are members of a band, where they get to hang out with each other. Some even describe it as feeling like they're part of a gang.
No, I'm so happy I'm alone. I love it. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so lucky. I don't have to go through the discussions. I can just do it completely how I want. And I don't need to compromise. But I have some good people around me that I can talk with around music and tech. And actually, we're talking about more like the circumstances of how it is to be an artist and the challenges we face in just living and earning a living from what we're doing, and the challenges you can have in projects with the people who commission you or something like this. But I'm very happy about being on my own in the whole composition process, because I really love going very deep and going into this complete state of being and listening and not being disturbed. It's very important for me.
Mm. Finally, Sus, we discussed earlier the value placed on curiosity as part of the creative process. What would you say is most piquing your curiosity or interest these days?
I think definitely the whole AI is definitely piquing my curiosity. Also, a lot of questions on where this development is going. I'm not so concerned about it in relation to music. It's more about society and how our life will change. And I see it as something that, of course, it can help us a lot and do amazing things. But with everything that is creating, something destructive is also happening. So it's really about finding that balance between the good things and also the bad things that can come out of that whole way our society will change. Yeah, that is something I'm following quite closely.
And do you see that as something you might potentially incorporate in your art going forward?
I have already done in some ways, because what I work with is often also generative systems, which you can call is a much less intelligent, of course, way of generating patterns or rhythms, or you do programming and it is able to just be continuous as long as you want. So those systems I do work with in my compositions as a technique. And then I go in and then I'm like the composer that really sits and picks out what was good and what did I not really find is so good. So I go in and then really select from those longer takes of just generative, let's say, rhythms I'm doing. But that's in a way much more interesting. So I'm not sitting and programming every little thing from the beginning, but I get some source material I can then go deeper with and then sculpt from there.
That's a fascinating insight into the way you work. Well, Sus, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to share your personal story and reflections on your craft as an artist with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was great talking to you.
Nordic Portraits is a series by me, Ben Catford. The music was composed by Nina Liu, and the visual identity by Copenhagen-based studio Frame. To learn more about today's guest and all the others from this season, visit nordicportraits.net. You can also follow us on Instagram, and remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes so we can get the word out. Thanks for listening.